Yeah, well, welcome to the Never Late Podcast, episode 63, I'm calling it. This is the one where we're going to sit down and break down a few conversations around opinion, and where it stands in 2024. But we're joined by a guy who's got way too little time on his hands between his bloody working and building Cannonball Fair Lanes and touring around the district in his troopy. So, Danny Dave, welcome to the studio, mate.
How are we?
Yeah, going really well, mate.
Good to be here.
And joined by Scott Kenny for his first time sitting in the box, mate. Hey, yeah. How's it feeling?
G'day, Moses. Danny Dave, how we going?
Yeah. Good, mate. Good.
Good, nice to be.
Yeah, feeling at home, mate.
Yeah, it's actually quite a comfortable little nook we got here.
Yeah, well, nice to see you've still got your pants on as much as you're feeling at home.
Yeah, well, it's not 6 o'clock yet, so, you know.
Anything could happen in the next half an hour.
This is true.
Well, I was nearly going to intro the episode with all our panel guests by doing the Never Late 8 plus 2 with Dave, and I thought, it's a bit indulgent with buddy six people all buddy listening in, but might just run him through it now to fill in a bit of time while we're waiting to kick off, so... Here we go, mate.
Look out.
Danny Dave and Dave Downey. What's going on, mate?
Same old, same old.
Same old, same old. All right. Well, you've heard enough of this podcast. You're a little bit of an expert in it, I reckon. You've quoted some stuff at me, which I hadn't have thought you would listen to, but, you know, that's what keeps me smiling. But what's your first car-related memory, mate?
First car-related memory?
As we often byline it by saying, when did you first realise you were into cars?
Yeah, I couldn't remember the age, but my grandfather had a green HQ Prem.
Yep.
2x3 auto, awesome car.
Yep.
I probably would have been 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, just remember that one fondly. Okay, well, jumping straight up to the, what's the first car you owned, mate, that you spent your own money on? I got a feeling maybe you didn't have a license when you bought your first one, but...
Very first?
Yeah.
Was an RX2 Capella.
Ooh, there you go.
Never did anything with it, actually. Flipped it and made money on it.
Yep.
Swapped it for a DT100 dirt bike.
Oh, there you go. Get more use out of the bike.
Yep. Sold the Mazda, got a 2 HT Prems and a HK Monaro.
Yep.
I was about 14.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fucking name and high, mate.
Yep. Back then they were cheap.
Yeah. Well, have you got any regretful sales and missed opportunities, mate?
Oh, how long have we got?
2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, everything gets sold for a reason, it tends to, generally. You know, you sell something to get into the next something.
Yeah, that's how it was. You had something cool, and you'd sell it to buy or build the next one.
Yeah.
Regretful sale. I would wish I still had one of the hatchbacks I had.
Yeah.
A 10-second full-engineered hatchback.
Yep.
In the early 90s.
Yeah.
When 10s were fast. It's not anymore.
Yeah, no.
Back then it was something cool.
Yeah, back when 12s were fast even, you know. So, yeah, no, 10-second hatch.
And I still see that car quite regularly.
Yep.
Which, it still runs 10s.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go faster because he doesn't want to cage it.
Oh, there you go. So you still get the sting every now and again.
Yeah, and I can't help myself. I go up and say good day and have a look, and it's fresh paint, but apart from that, it looks the same.
Same car. Bloody awesome, mate. What was the other one I was saying? Missed opportunity, something you could have bought that you kick yourself every now and again because you didn't buy it?
Quite a few.
As someone said the other day, buddy, HQ 2 doors, should have just stacked them deep.
That's anything. Yeah, that should have caught a water with them. They were cheap.
Yeah.
I was offered a XYGT.
Yep.
Had phase 3 running gear.
Yep.
Still has it. Still around that car.
Yeah.
$7,000.
Yeah.
But I had the hatchback at the time, and it was like, who wants to slow down? The hatch was heaps quicker.
Yeah, Darren Cunningham's L34 with 78,000 Ks on it, $7,500. I could have bought that one night.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's all the stuff was worth then.
Yeah.
So you can't look back now and go, oh, I should have bought that. It was cheap because,
And a lot of people are sitting there that haven't got anything at all that are wishing that they'd bought a whole heap of Monaros or whatever, but they're not really car enthusiasts either. Just see the money in it.
I'm glad that we got to drive them, flog the shit out of them.
Yeah.
They weren't anything special.
No.
So you could actually have a good variety of cars over the years.
Yeah, that's it.
Whereas now most people are too scared they might hurt it. Well,
yeah.
Stuff that, drive it.
Yeah, if I can drive them and fix them. Yeah. What do we got? Favourite car event or type of event? I mean, you've had a pretty good Summernats this year, I'm tipping.
Yeah, oh, Summernats has always been good. Like, from the early years, it was great. And it still is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's changed a lot, but the vibe is still awesome.
Yeah.
It's the place to be.
Yeah, no, actually, pretty much quoted a bit of our conversation to the last one. So the misbehaviour might have been, you know, an hour of a bad moment compared to all the joy and everything else that it brings.
Yeah, and there's always been that sort of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like, every year, Saturday Arvo, there's obviously going to be fights in that one spot.
Yeah.
Just that now there's more cameras and phones and social media.
Yeah, no, very cool, mate. Okay, current cars.
I mean, Troopy.
Troopy.
Gotta love Troopy.
Yeah, no.
I've got the Fairlane, obviously.
Yep.
ZF Fairlane.
Latest street machine for anyone that wants to pull it out and have a look.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got the panel van out front here.
Yeah.
Just an XG van.
Yep.
Yeah, it's SVO stuff on it, XR6 crap.
Yep.
I've got an XG ute. And, yeah, that's
about it at the minute. Stable. Yeah.
It's a couple of little things tucked away, but we don't need to know about that.
Yeah, no, there you go. We can be a little bit rude, a bit selective at times too. A dream car or garage if you had unlimited funds, mate? Is there something that you'd really, go and invest heavy in?
Nothing crazy. I wouldn't mind. Always wanted a Barbados green L34.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy, but I wouldn't mind one then.
Yeah, that'd be horned. There you go.
Had many opportunity, but at the time, you didn't have the money, you were spending on something else. I'll get one of them one year and all of a sudden they're worth bloody 200 grand.
Like my old man having the red and black A9X back in the day, I always figured I might buy a low mileage one of them at some point and missed the moment.
They were always the poor man's L34.
I reckon so too. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'll agree. Okay, Scotty, question time, mate.
I always keep forgetting my own question. Dave, favourite movie or TV vehicle?
I don't know. You'd almost have to go Mad Max Interceptor. Ah, well, black on black. Everyone calls it Interceptor, but
yeah,
it's never called that until like the end of Mad Max 2.
Yeah, really?
Mm. Yeah, there you go. And you learn, Scotty.
Yep.
Pursuit Special.
Yep.
Yep.
According to the movie, yeah.
An Interceptor was emblazoned on the back of one of the patrol cars.
Yeah, Max's, yeah.
Yeah.
Just cool cars, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Lesser known passion beside cars, mate? What else makes you tick?
I don't know. Cars and bikes.
Cars and bikes, that's it. And roaming the country.
Having a good time, yeah.
Roaming the countryside and the troopy.
Yeah, enjoyed doing a bit of filming.
Yep.
YouTube-y stuff, so. That's probably about it.
Yeah, we're trying to say, bloke with a troopy, is that it?
Yeah, bloke and a troopy, Australia-wide.
Yep. No, there you go. Get onto it. Check it out, guys.
Yeah.
Got any words of wisdom or inspiration, mate, to tack on the end of this one?
Do what you want. You get sick, so sick these days of people saying, what do you think these will look like on my car? Mate, I don't care what they look like.
Yeah.
If you like them, go for it.
Put them on and have a look, mate. See what you think.
Yeah, everyone's too caught up with what other people think.
Yeah.
So build what you want, enjoy it, and have fun.
Yep. Love it.
That's my theory.
No, that's perfect, mate. Oh, I'm glad we got to sneak these in. Scotty's got the tech all ready to go so we can pull people up as they start dialing in at around the 6 o'clock on our Thursday night. So, all good. I'll just sign off for the time being until we get a whole heap of involved.
Fingers crossed everything goes well.
No, absolutely, Scotty. I'm feeling for you already, man.
Some days I just hate fucking technology.
Well, I can just, I'll announce, I suppose we're underway anyway, because we've been underway since we started chatting, but it sort of came from Andrew reaching out to me through Messenger, Mr. Andrew Clatworthy there, about have we reached a critical point now where we can't actually critique something where we have to I'm only paraphrasing, but where we have to love everything that's put before us. Otherwise, we're grouped into some kind of arsehole demographic, I guess. But it was interesting because, I've sort of put this panel together just so in 2024 we can have this conversation around opinion. But, everyone that's sort of included and the ones that couldn't get involved for prior commitments as well. But I mean, none of us would deliver it in that way. You know, if we had had a you know, positive suggestion to make towards a build, then we'd find a way to relay that in a positive light too. You know, we wouldn't just turn around and bag someone unnecessarily, I guess. But so I'm probably not going to be running the show. Like, we just need to sort of basically find a way
I'll pick up there if you like, because I think, as you say, I sort of started this discussion. You know, have we got to be nice to everyone? We're becoming a little bit exactly the type of people that we are trying to avoid being, which is we don't want to be opinionated assholes, and we also don't want to be woke, for want of a better word, which I really hate the word. But, you know, I think being inclusive has some sort of limitations, and I think it comes down to, in a nutshell, if you've got nothing nice to say, just scroll on past. How hard is it? But it's
Exactly.
We'll leave the car 100. Out in question. I'm not going to mention what the car was, but I think
I'll say too. Even the particular vehicle, when it sort of landed with me, I sort of went, "Oh shit! I don't have to defend this car now, do I?" Because on first glance, there was something about it for me that just sort of got me on the other side. But I mean, a more rounded post turned up with a few more photos, and I sort of saw a little more merit in the vehicle. But it was just like, you know, it was just funny that it all happened over that one, because that was the one that I thought, shit, this can really test me. And
I think there becomes a tipping point, like anything, there becomes a tipping point where you've just got to sort of say, hey, hang on a second, some of this stuff just isn't right. And we all know that history has shown that some really ugly customs have been built, but you don't want to be the prima donna. You don't want to be the guy, just because you have to own a nice car yourself, that thinks everyone else's car sucks because you didn't build it or whatever. You know, you don't want to become that arsehole, so to speak, that is judging everyone else. And I've never really wanted to judge everyone else, because one of the things that I found, our sport has this underbelly of elitism, and I think the whole car culture can have this underbelly of elitism. And sometimes that's celebrated in very open form, like you'll have the elite hall at Summonats, where they encourage elitism. But I think what it is that there is a place for elite type builds, and there's a place for grassroots. And I think I'm speaking for all of us here, is we are more grassroots focused. And I think because we're grassroots focused, I think we stay a little bit more grounded. And because of that, we are also not going to be opinionated and have a crack at some poor joker who's just built a really ugly car. And, you know, he's having a crack and he's probably enjoying it. But you've got to put yourself in his shoes. How would you feel if everyone just started bagging out your car? And you know full well that social media loves nothing better than hanging shit on people and bagging stuff out. And you get all the vomit emojis and all that sort of thing, and why would you bother? And I think that's what we've got to be careful of, but we also got to recognise, look, mate, you missed the mark on that one, something chronic. Yeah,
go, Maddie, you got something to contribute from the younger set?
And that there too is, I think, a problem that is had now, is everyone gets behind social media because they're not going to get punched in the mouth over it. They can say whatever they like and no one, you know, they'll get pulled up via the media. But in the 80s, if you went to a car show and bagged someone out and bagged out the owner to their face, they'd get put in their place. Quick smart. You know, so that has sort of built up that wall there where they can have their, and good on them for having their speech, but in the way in which it's done 90% of the time, I believe it's the wrong way, because people are happy to bag everyone out and throw up the vomit emoji, but 90% of the time, what is that person actually building themselves?
Yep.
Hit the nail. That's what I always like to question, you know, like.
That's right.
And, you know, there's plenty of things I see that I'm like, oof, I probably wouldn't do that. But I also take into account that there's people that would look at what I'm doing and say, oh, yeah, I wouldn't do that. So you got to wear it on both, the shoe on both foots, and think, you know, that car that XYZ's building, he's doing plenty of shit to it that I think's distasteful and I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
But I bet they feel the same way on what I'm doing.
and you can still have the healthy conversation about it also.
Yeah, you can all agree to disagree. This on is how you, taste is a thing.
Yeah.
I think it all comes down to how you actually put yourself across. You know, you can say something that may not be, you know, you're not saying anything positive about it, as far as you might not like something about a particular vehicle, or, you know, the proportions there or something, or something looks a bit off or whatever. But it's how you, it's the difference between saying it using some grace or saying it being a fuckstick. And I think that's exactly where the big difference is. I mean, you know, over the years building cars, like I've had friends say to me, man, look, I know you're doing this. I know you've got a vision of what you're doing, but I really think maybe look at doing blah, blah, blah. And so you have the conversation like you guys are saying, but that particular car you guys were referring to, I remember seeing the photos and I mean, look, it wasn't my taste at all. Like I thought proportions were all over the shop, but you know what? I don't need to, it's none of my bizzo. I didn't build the car. I haven't put the time and effort or money into doing it. So really what I think doesn't matter is shit. It's what the person who's building it, if they're happy with it, good on them. But I didn't feel the need to waste my time getting on there and saying some stupid negative comment just for the sake of trying to puff myself up or make myself feel better when it's for shit, you know, like it's...
I'm not an asshole either. So you're just better to say nothing.
I mean, you've written at length on this subject too, Simo.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're an expert in our room too. But
yeah,
it's funny how easily you're dropping that G word now, mate. Just dropping that grace in there.
Well, it's... I've said to you in the past that that word... You know, that word, it's really pertinent to this sort of conversation. And look, you know, as you guys know, I built a custom Valiant panel van with a Trans Am front. I've had many good and bad opinions and many happy and unwanted opinions on that. But to me, in my vision, it's fine. Like it looks how it was supposed to look and what I always wanted. But it's, you know, like I said, I can see things in other people's projects that aren't to my taste. But you know what? It's not, my taste isn't, I'm not building it. Like my taste isn't their taste. So that's it. Who cares? Like, but that's right. The thing. I feel that I, and along with a lot of other people, have the ability to just shut the fuck up and not feel necessary to, you know, stick the knife into someone you don't even know just for whatever reason. But of course, there are so many people out there. You see it on every single car page, known to man and woman. You know, there's always people, and a lot of the time it's the same people over and over. They have to get across their 2 cents just for whatever reason to try and make themselves feel better. And they're still probably driving their mum's hand-me-down Corolla. You know, who would know? But,
yep.
And if they're not, if they are people who've accomplished a lot in the scene or whatever the case may be, they should fucking know fucking better about how they put their opinions across when, you know, people might look up to their builds and all the rest of it. So, yeah.
I know Maddie's sort of Maddie's building that panel van, and we're not going to put pressure on because everything takes the time it takes to build. But that's going down a similar treatment, though, too, isn't it, mate? front wise and stuff. You know, you're a little bit inspired by the work of Simo.
Yeah, I am very inspired by Disturbia. That's actually between that and Al Fleming's motivator. That's what got me into wanting to build a van. And I always was going to go a Trans Am or a Monza front, and now as times have changed and the way that I look at things changed, I'm just going to run a single headlight HQ front, but it's still going to sport a lot of that 70s, 80s, 90s sort of taste, colour, 90s wheels, things like that, back interior, etc. And a Disturbia is a great example of a car that you see comments where some people try and bash the living arsehole out of it, but what have a lot of them built?
Yeah.
And that's what I always come back to. And how you say it and how you can say that you don't like Simon's van. I think with Disturbia, one of the coolest things about it is the vision that Simon had as a child to build that car. I think that, you know, that is what, to me, that's what's cool. That when you were a kid, Simon, you wanted to build this Valiant van, and here it is.
Yeah,
that's to me, you know.
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, you're right. You go, Andrew.
Okay. On that note, how many builds are influenced by social media? Like, I am still old school enough, and I hate the term old school, but
Let's yeah, just ride on that.
You're looking at the wrong way. It's, it's not old school. It's old school.
I did go to school.
Yeah, I like that.
I had 100% attendance at school. Real, weird little factoid. I never had a sick day in my entire school life, all 10 years. But what I'm wondering is how many people built their cars according to the taste of social media. They say, oh, look, I've got this far, and what do you guys reckon? And then you're going to get a whole plethora of different opinions.
Well, actually, Dave was only speaking on that very point earlier on.
Yeah, and cars like Skymos and my FC Holden Coupe. My FC Holden Coupe was built before the internet came about, just before the internet came about. And I had it finished in 2001, I think. I bought a computer around about 2002, and then I was invited on all these different platforms, like oldholden.com, which is how I know a lot of you guys. And I was one of the original founding people that joined the group on there. I wouldn't say I started it or anything. I didn't.
But you were there from the kickoff. Yeah.
I was there from the kickoff. And cars like Disturbia and a few other ones, and my car and numerous other cars were built before the internet. So we had that joy of not having everyone's opinions thrust down our throats. We got our inspiration from magazines. I have no doubt that Simo would have picked up
Wheels
and all of those magazines. And you went, yep, I'm going to take a bit of this, I'm going to take a bit of that. And you make your own, you cook up your own basic design of what you want to do. I went to all the American magazines, even went to America and went and met George Barris and Gene Winfield and all those people, which is weird because I actually did video recordings, which I've never published with these guys, which is just odd. I should publish them, but then I didn't want to seem like a bit of a wanker, so I never have. But the thing was, we had nothing but magazines to get our inspirations and things from. Nowadays, we've got social media, and you know, you could be in the middle of building something. You probably put 3 weeks metalwork into something, and then all of a sudden, some guy goes, "Oh, mate, that looks like utter crap. Why don't you do this and that?" And I think that has the ability to set the seeds of doubt into the builder's mind of, "Oh, maybe I am going down the wrong road." And then you start taking your directives from some bloody wanker who's never built a damn thing in his life or has any idea of sense of proportion or design that's sitting on the internet. And you're thinking, this is why I don't post my current builds on there. A few of you may have seen like little snippets that I've sent on private messenger of stuff that I'm putting together, but I will refuse point blank to put my builds as I'm doing them online. I mean, things like the Rust Abyssi, I mean, that's just a fill-in project, just for something to have fun with. But that's the sort of way that I think we need to look at all of this. So this is the subject tonight of, you know, how judgmental do we get on other people's cars. I think just let people build stuff, and then when it's built, make your decisions then, not try and add your 2 cents all the way along as the guy is building it. And I'm watching some old customizers right now here in New Zealand. There's Trev Halstead, who's built numerous radical custom Studebakers, and he's doing his very last one, and he's posting it blow by blow all over the internet. And I'm thinking, this is not the right thing, because he's getting nothing but negative opinion, and because they don't see his end vision. And that's the hard thing. You can't judge a car before it's built. Let the guy build it first, and then if you don't like it,
then make your opinion.
Yeah, that's right. And don't add your 2 cents worth in until it's done. And if you don't like it, don't say anything. If you love it, let the guy know he's done really well. And if otherwise, you know, the silence will speak for itself. If no one says a damn word, you must have built something pretty bloody horrible.
I think the other point that kind of gets missed is car customization in whatever form it takes is a personal thing. It's a personal touch.
Yeah.
That's how it started. It was an extension of people's personality. No different to the way we dress or the way we cut our hair or what, you know, what music we listen to. It's all personal, right? So, you know, what I like is what I like, and I like what I like, and I don't really care what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
I'm happy to take constructive feedback on how certain things are done. But if someone comes up to me and says, I don't like your Bluebird wagon, well, good for them. You know, I like it and it makes me happy and that's it. If someone else doesn't like it, well, that's up to them. And I think it's real easy, particularly with social media, to just crack off a comment and not really think about whether your comment
you're
is
not thinking about the other. And it comes full down exactly like what you said, Scotty, is that a lot of people throw their comment in without really thinking the time that has gone in. And my one good example that I can always throw into this is me and my engine builder, when this new street machine had come out, I'd always take my copy around to his shed and we would have a look. And if there was a HQ to Z in it, we would have a look at what they've done for what possibly I could do or, you know, little things that I could change or do and things like that. And we would not, in the right way, you'd pick at the car and you'd say, oh, I wouldn't do that or I wouldn't do this. This could be done better. But at the end of every conversation, we'd look at each other and we'd say, well, where's my HQ Monaro in the current Street Machine magazine? That's right, it isn't. So you can critique a car to make yours better if that's where you want to be, but do it tastefully and remind yourself that when you've read, oh, they've done a 10-year build on this and you go, oh, I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't do this. Where's your car in the magazine? That's right, it's not. So sit down, acknowledge what they've done, acknowledge what you may change, but acknowledge the fact that they've put time, effort, hardship. You know, you read some guys and they thank their wife and kids because they've been out in the shed 4 out of 7 nights, 3 hours a night, and they've put all this time in and they turn around and come back inside when it's done and their kids have been, for example, their eldest is 3 when they start building the car and all of a sudden their child eldest is 13 and they've done all their homework on their own and things like that. So it does put a toll on the builder financially, mentally, everything.
And even the kids, like the kids are paying attention to the social media as well. So say if you're 45 and, yeah, you're building something and your 15-year-old son's involved too, well, he's going and he's reading them comments too where people are attacking the car. And then, you know, maybe it takes a little bit of that shine off on the family vibe too. But see, I feel like I own a bit of this position too because I'm sort of on the record with custom cars. I used to find controversial customs built in this country and then go, right, I'm going to share that into Custom Cars Oz. And then I'd come along and check out how everyone was reacting and then I'd be asking for a little bit of calm and, you know, but just in the comments thread, just having the conversation about, hang on a second, this guy might be in our community and, you know, so I sort of wonder whether, you know, what I've done is, you know, stifled people from, you know, criticisms and having conversations, you know, because, but again, we know how to do it and do it right. Did you work at the Great Magazine for a while too, Andrew? Were you at Street Machine?
Yes, I was there from basically my FC Coupe was discovered at 2001 Hot Rod Show, and I think Simon Telford, he approached or rang me. It might have been Craig Park or Telfo. I'm pretty sure it was Telfo. And once they got on the phone to me, I sort of let fly at them a little bit. I was being quite critical and I said, we've really got to stop this bullshit between Street Machines and Hot Rodders. We're all the same guys. And the thing was, I worked out pretty quickly. I was preaching to the choir because that was their train of thought as well, is that Hot Rodders and Street Machines needed to be one and the same group, you know, not two separate groups. And to that end, I was being very critical with how they put some of their articles out in the magazines and they're having some of these pub lunches that they used to have in Sydney at the head office. I'm not sure if you ever got a chance to have any of those, Simo, with them, but they're pretty legendary there, their lunch.
No.
I did a good time. It was awesome. But then because I was being very vocal, Jeff Seddon, the editor at the time, way cool guy, he said to me, Andrew, why don't you just shut up and put your money where your mouth is? You write a story. So I did. And the rest was history. And I wrote it in pretty much the same way that Writer's Journal, like Pat Ganahl and some of these guys were doing the writing. And I got pulled up pretty quickly and they said, hang on a second, that's not the Street Machine style. And I said, okay, you tell me what style you want me to write in and I'll write in your style. So I fit into their groove pretty easily. But as time wore on, I think what worked against me in the end was my move to New Zealand. So initially I was still getting some work through them and it paid really, really well. I couldn't get my head around the sort of money that they were throwing at us just as contributors for writing articles. And I really, really cherished all the times and assignments they sent us on because it really opened up my eyes to the whole car community a lot better. And it got me a foot in the door into other people's businesses where I could actually go in and interview people and see how they ran their business and how things work and how things tick. And it was really, really good like that. So, yeah, for about 10-odd years, maybe a little bit more, maybe 12 years, I worked for the magazine. But they're always looking for new writers. And I think by the time I was starting to fall off, Simo came along and we had this discussion at the report. And
it's your fault.
It wasn't my fault. Okay?
Hey, hey, look, yeah, no, it wasn't it. Your fault. I didn't bring you here to have digs at each other.
Yeah. So basically, I liked a lot of the other guys that were writing as well because I think even though we're getting off topic, they're talking about custom cars.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? Magazine is still pretty relative to a lot of this, but if you read the magazine, and obviously everyone here has. If you read the magazine, you're into that culture, you're into that way of thinking, so you're on that wavelength. And if you're on that wavelength, then that's the wavelength that we've been, I think, exposed, inadvertently preaching the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, don't be an asshole. Don't go around judging people's cars and then talking smack about them and expecting to get off scot-free and like your negative opinion really counts. And I think where this has come full circle is why we end up having this discussion is Chris said, yeah, you've got a valid point. Where do we draw the line on defending ugly cars? So that's sort of, I think there is no defensive of ugly cars. I think, as Maddie said, you know, you don't know the time and the effort that people have put into it.
With the two guests that we've got in Danny Dave and Simo, both having their current cars in the latest Street Machine. Have you? I know, but for the little bit of custom treatments around your car, Dave, has anyone, you know, stood there and not quite understood your car and wanted to level a bit of shit at it? Or
I expected a lot of that at Summonats.
Yeah.
And didn't hear any negative about it. I was expecting heaps.
Yeah.
Like if I
no, they just seen your size, Danny, and they're like, no,
you beat me to it, Matty.
Yeah. If I was going to build that, I wouldn't do it as it is.
Yeah.
Like 100%. It's more of a preservation than a building thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, like a lot of people came up and said, wow, that's got some crazy stuff that they don't see until they actually have a look.
Yeah.
But no, it actually got a lot better reception than I expected.
Yeah, I love that it's got the crazy treatments, like the custom treatments and that are on it, because he could have built that car it's without that to do cable. Yeah, you know, the fact that he went that extra step, I love it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and a lot of stuff people sort of, like they don't notice the different body lines on the rear quarters and boot until they actually stand there and look at it.
Yeah.
And there's like, a lot to take
what's
in that
going
car?
On there?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
About Simo, I'll give you a tough shot now, Mag Review, Simo, for your valiant
thank you, because
it is one of those shots that you, and you would have too, if it wasn't your car, you'd see it and go, God, that looks staunch. Yeah, that shot from the back.
yeah. Look, it's funny, just what I was saying with Dave's car before, like it's part of his identity is the custom work and, you know, like it adds to that allure of it being a cannibal race car and all the rest of it. Like, if it was a stock-looking ZF or ZG Fairlane doing the cannonball, it just wouldn't have the same punch, like the same identity that it has by having the custom work front and rear and the colour and the wheels and all that stuff that makes up for it. But, you know, it's interesting, just on that, perfect example of a custom car that people don't really think is a custom car is the Mad Max Interceptor Coupe with the Concorde front, right? I've seen on forums and all the rest of it, and so like Facebook especially, someone will post a photo of that Concord panel van that they did for the Ford did for the motor show in Melbourne in 1977. Yeah, the silver one with the three stripes.
Yep.
Right. And then you'll sort of point, you know, they'll bag it and you point out to them, well, hang on, do you like the Mad Max Interceptor Coupe? It's the same front.
Yeah.
Right. But because the Interceptor Coupe has got such an identity for what it is and such a following for what it is, people don't, you know, it just, it almost, it takes away the fact that it's been customized because it's got its own personality for being what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. The van came before the Interceptor. And it's just crazy how it can
custom. Sorry. The Interceptor
is as far as if I put that front
an ugly car.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, if you see and you see photos of XB hardtops or whatever with those fronts, but they might be red or blue or a completely different color. And people go, oh, what a waste of a hardtop. But it's like, mate, paint the thing black. And it's the Interceptor.
And you love it.
It's, it's completely accepted compared to being
paint it black, what it is. Put so a Scott hat on
identity
it.
Really where identity really punches through, I think. Yeah.
What was the flares on the Interceptor? What were the flares?
Yeah, they were Pete Arcapadian flares.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as big as the Concorde, of course. Yeah.
No. And the roof spoiler was moulded off Bob Jane's HQ race car. It was at the back of a HQ spoiler, and they put it on the roof.
Okay. I didn't know that.
No, there you go.
That's a cool fact.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the thing. More like panel vans, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
As a rule, You know, like we had the Goss spoiler as well that was somewhat common in vans too. So you've got to keep in mind that come off the coupe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but like I've been guilty of that myself when I was first starting to get into vans. I would have been 15, maybe, so 12 years ago. And I remember seeing photos of the XC with the three stripes. And I actually remember commenting, oh, that's got the Mad Max front on it. And rest in peace to his beautiful soul, Rob Burns pulled me up and said, no, Matty, that come first. So as a young kid, that was something that I learned. And like many that had a conversation with Rob, you learned a lot of things from that man that was very, very knowledgeable. So, yeah, like I remember.
I have to ask, how did you get into the whole custom car scene, mate?
So my dad...
You've just given away that you're 27-year-old. I can do mathematics now.
quick man, the young fella. I'm about 27.
Yeah, so 27. I mean, my son's 27. He's about to turn 28. He's not really into the custom cars at all, even, you know, with all my influence. He's more into the Jap Utes and that sort of thing.
And I've got to say, they've got their own place as well. Like through this whole conversation we're having, they're just as important as what the custom scene is in their own right.
Well, I'm having a bit of a play with one at the moment, as some people are well aware, the Rusta Bitsy, which was an exercise in complete futility. I just thought, what happens if I just go ahead and build something that no one expects me to build? And one of those, I think it was a bit of a stirring the pot thing, and I took the world's rustiest car. This thing was really, really rusty. You could stick your head through it. It was pretty rusty. And I thought, I wonder if I can rebuild this. And
you hope for Blue Crush then, Simo?
Yeah.
with the stir, with the stir of the pot of Facebook.
All my cranium either.
Restore it.
Such a waste.
Get old mate over for a few sleepovers. And I can see it.
Yeah. But the thing is, if you build something that that people aren't expecting, and what none of you guys are aware of is my ultimate destiny with that Mitzi L200. It is so far removed from anything that I would ever build for myself, and it was never meant to be a project. And then I thought, how do I make a really ugly car, which the L200 is just not a nice car at all, how do I make something really ugly into something iconic? And I thought, there's the challenge.
Yep.
You've got to try and find cars because we can't afford FJ Holdens anymore. They just cost too much money.
Yeah.
and you can't afford to go and chop up an EH anymore. They just cost too much money. Yeah. So
really afford to go buy an XD or a VH Commodore. Like I say VH because I've got one, but you can't afford to go there now. Like I think I bought my VH, I bought it in 2016, so 8 years ago, and I paid $3,000 for it, and it had 111,000 Ks on it. And 6 months rego, yeah, it was cheap then, but I was still a first year apprentice, so it was expensive for me. But you fast forward 8 years, they've gone up that much in value that it's not funny.
Yeah.
So
exactly, they're hot at the moment too.
Yeah, you've got to look for the cars that no one wants to play with and think, what can I do with these that can also follow along a traditional route? So without letting the cat out of the bag too much, my L200 is basically going to become how do I let the cat out of the bag without letting the cat out of the bag? It's one of those cars
by keeping the cat just in the bag.
Yeah, just in the bag.
Starting to sound like Bad Boy Bubby.
Shredding his cat.
Cat yeah. Yeah. Still.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cat. Custom Vans and Trucks magazine, like, say, 1980. What would you have done in 1980 with a brand new L200 that fits the 70s?
Put a step side on it.
Big flares.
Bingo.
Step side and a canopy. Pardon the word canopy, but I've oddly, keeping in mind my age, I oddly remember one of the CVTs that I've got. I think it had like a Chevy Love truck on it. It was blue, two-tone blue with like a darker blue or a purple accent through, and I'm pretty sure it had a step side on it with a canopy, from memory.
Well, you hit the nail on the head because that's exactly what I'm doing with it, and I've not posted any pictures online because once I've determined my build style, I like to sort of keep it to myself, and then I'll just do a reveal, and then everyone can go, oh, right, okay, why didn't you say you were doing this?
I can't wait to say that.
Well, as long as you reveal the car only, okay? Don't reveal yourself, just the car. Let's get it nice and clear.
Hey, obviously, I've got photos.
Well enough, right? Now, don't put those thoughts in my head. You'll learn to regret them.
Now, I'm going to ask, has anyone seen the 77 Holden van that's up for sale at the moment? And the listing was down as the photo on purple van from the internet, which is a pretty weird fucking way to script the name. Yeah. But it's got
the pointy
shark-looking nose.
Yeah, Alien.
I did Alien. See that.
Yeah, that was the car.
Yep.
Simo, you'd know it well, Alien.
Sure. It's been around, literally been around unfinished since the 80s.
Yeah.
Right, it's like the world's longest unfinished project.
Yeah, and you've seen it listed for 15.
Yeah. Well, last time I seen it, besides this time, it was for sale for like $1,800, and not much more, I believe, has been done to it than I read a comment of 5 tins of bog into it, and now it is where it is now, but. Same thing goes. If our mate's paid $1,800 for it, good on him. And if you can get $15 for it, good on him again.
As well. Yeah, because that's another side of this whole opinion thing. Have we got any right to tell people what they should be asking for their fucking cars? Because that shit wears me out, you know, back in the day.
And it's only worth what someone will pay.
Yeah, back in the day, you have to get the phone number out of the trading post, ring old mate up, tell him he was fucking dreaming, you know. Well, now you can just destroy his fucking ad in the first comment you drop. You know, goes on sale.
6:30 Thursday morning at the newsagents.
Yep, that's it.
I have to ask, Chris, did you ever get anyone ring you up and criticise you for what you're advertising in the trading post? Did that ever happen to you?
Negative.
You just ring up the shit you want to go. You just ring up the shit you want to go and look at, and you avoid the shit you're not interested in. You know, like that's
I don't sell stuff, so I'm sorted.
I used to get the phone calls of something I was selling in the trading post. I think I was selling a 31 Model A Roadster, and it's just in parts, and I had $2,000 on it. And the guy rings me up and says, "Mate, you're fucking dreaming." He says, "I'll give you $50 for it all," and then he says, "You don't know what you got." And he just harassed me. And eventually he actually showed up. And you were saying before, like, the internet makes people brave, but there used to be actual brave people out there that used to just... You
know, good one. Which I remember rocking up at your place and I had an A-model coupe on the back of a Falcon Ute.
Is that right?
Yeah, me and Ralphie did a road trip up there and we went up to buy an A-model coupe. You were doing that white Monaro.
I thought it was on the back of your tow truck, you and George.
No, me and Peter was.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Yep.
Yep, you were doing that white, I think it was HTGDS at the time, or HG or something.
Oh, the Monaro.
Yeah, for another panel band, that's it.
If you want some pertinent breaking news that's got to do with advertising on the internet, my Disturbia van's actually going up for auction on March 1st, right? It's time to move it on. And
wow.
I've decided, after talking with Gary Johnston, I was like, you know what? After advertising old days and going through the bullshit of wanting to kill everybody who felt it necessary to message me about the fact it had stickers on it and all that sort of shit, which I actually wrote a story about. That's how bad it got.
I thought, you know what?
I am not even going to go anywhere near that with the red van. So I've got 782 Motors auctioning it for me as of March 1st. You know, it might sell, it might not. But I thought that's time for me to take a week off from social media while that's up for auction.
100%. I can't wait to comment on that.
Let them, they get paid to deal with all the fuck sticks. And it will obviously, you know, they'll have links and stuff around to it on the band pages and Valiant pages and every other page. But
it'll,
you know what I mean? Like
100%.
It cops it if it's put out there anyway. But it's, yeah. Well, it's that thing where, you know...
Blue truss, aren't you?
I hope Restorer buys it and turns it back to stock.
Yeah, well, you know what? If they pay the money, they can do whatever they want with it. The reason, like, being with that is that, you know, look, I've achieved everything I wanted to achieve with it and more. And anything that I have that's to do with it, I don't need the car sitting there to look at it to have that achievement. So, you know, and it just frees up things to do other things with cars or whatever in life. And but it's one of those things where not having to be at the coalface of dealing with people trying to potentially ascertain a genuine buyer amongst 200 wankers, that's why it's better, I believe, to have it looked after by a third party, for sure.
So you're going to put that into blue crush, aren't you, Simon?
He's gonna start paying.
I don't know about Blue Crush. I've only ever heard of Blue Crush.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. It's where having that done by a third party just takes away that the dealing of it out of there. So I'm not gonna turn away a potential buyer by thinking they give me a hard time and telling them to get fucked. Yeah. You know, like it just has that. You have that arm's distance, which I think is important with certain cars.
People don't realise as well is that as they're attacking other cars on the page that are for sale, social media, some bloke's got a car that's sitting in the shed that he really is thinking about listing, but he's thinking twice because he doesn't want to cop all that bullshit. You know, it's nearly drying the fucking market up. You know, because, a lot of people see it and they see people's bad outcomes. Fuck selling my car, you know. I'm not doing it, you know.
Yep. I'm actually going through this at the moment. I've got the Bluebird up for sale for a similar reason. I want to move on to something else. Mm. Now, if it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'll just keep plugging away with it. But I was at work today and I copped a Facebook message off some clown. Now, my car, it's a 1981 Series 1 Bluebird. Now, they were sold as a Nissan Datsun Bluebird. This is when Nissan were changing and phasing the Datsun name out in Australia. Australia was the last geographical area that had the Datsun name. So, Bluebirds...
My brother bought one brand new in 1981.
That's why I ended up with one. My family had a couple of them over the course of the 80s, and I just grew to like that shape.
Yeah.
But that's what they were sold as. They were sold as a Nissan Datsun Bluebird. The compliance plate stamp Nissan. It's registered as a Nissan, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when I listed it on Marketplace, you can't put Datsun Bluebird. You can only put Nissan. So I put that up. This clown this morning while I'm at work. If it's 1981, then it's a Datsun in capitals, Bluebird, not Nissan. The name didn't change till 1984. And I'm like,
that guy's out there counting dots.
Who the fuck's got spare time to do that to start with?
Oh, yeah, well, this is the thing, right? So I just went back at him and said, listen, it's complied as a Nissan, it's registered as a Nissan, and I didn't have the option to list it as a Datsun. Like, I'm well aware of what the car is, mate. I've owned plenty of them, so I know my way around them. Thanks, but no thanks.
When do you want to come? when do you want to come and have a look?
Then he's replied with a YouTube link to the original 1981 ad of the Datsun Bluebird when it was released in June 1981. See this TV ad, 1981. No mention of Nissan, only Datsun. And I said, I'm well aware of the Bluebird's marketing campaign, mate. Thanks for your time. You know,
but
and
you shouldn't have to put disclaimers in every ad you do either, should you?
The reality is, say an ad,
by the way, I know it's a Datsun. Like,
Datsun, just, Nissan, someone who gives probably a shit isn't if even remotely interested
in buying it.
If you don't want to buy it, don't buy it. And I've had, like, it's a bit of a pro. Like, I'm not in a hurry to sell it, but I've had two blokes drive from Geelong all the way over to the southeast suburbs of Melbourne to come and look at it and not buy it. So, fair enough. Fair play to them for wasting their time. And then I haven't had a lot of criticism or people telling me I'm asking too much or anything like that. But this clown just came out of the woodwork today and I had to laugh. I screenshotted and sent it to Moses a lot at 10 o'clock this morning and said, here's a discussion point for tonight. straight off the bat, this is just ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. Who's got the time on their hands to go to YouTube and put in the search bar 1981 Nissan Datsun Bluebird release commercial?
What do you reckon he was wearing when he sent that?
I've got no idea.
Did he have his favourite skivvy on?
His wife's underwear.
Or his mum's.
Yeah. So
I sort of hope he was wearing Borat's mankini.
You reckon, man?
If he was wearing Borat's mankini, I'd let him get away with it.
Some people just don't know when to just pull their heads in. And I think that's.
I do have a photo of me wearing a Santa suit and a mankini.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I've got a photo of you wearing lace.
I don't find that disturbing at all.
Back when you were in the Wolverine.
I've seen worse things.
I've still got that couch, too.
keeping it for the DNA.
Talking about selling things, my old man, he recently went through that too because this is one a lot of people don't know that he had, and a lot of the time I think he forgot that he had it and I forgot. But Dad had up until a few months ago, he had a B61 Mac. So he bought that, you know, it was Simon, that I know you'd love that. You're a big fan of B61.
Big time.
Well, I'm telling you, you can't see us, Matty, but Denny Dave's nodding the head.
Yeah, cool thing.
He's got the nod.
Yeah.
You know, so Dad bought that. And this, you know, this is where it really does relate to this conversation on so many levels that I remember, and a bit to Andrew's question about customs, I remember going with Dad. I was probably about 3 to 4 years old and we went and had a look at this thing and it was yellow, it was full of rust. And at the time, I didn't understand shit about it. It was a day out with Dad.
Yep.
And he bought it. He didn't pay a lot for it. The back of it was bent. It had been through a bushfire. It used to have a timber jinker on it. There wasn't really much to it. It's very rusty. And it went to my pops, and then when my pop died, it got moved to a family friend's across the road to where it sat till end of last year.
Yep.
And he recently sold it. A guy that was funny enough is from Mangapla near Wagga, I believe him and a friend bought it. And they bought it because there was still some good bits on it. Keep in mind, you can't, unless you've got probably 500,000, you can't do much with it because it's got that much rust. And, you know, anyone can do anything with anything if you've got the money and the time. And Dad was always a bit of a, with that vehicle, I'll get to it one day. And sadly, it never happened. And I remember as years went on and I got a bit older and started getting into cars and a bit to answer Andrew's question as well, where customs got me was I'd get picked up from preschool in Dad's 1955 Chev. The only reason it's got one seatbelt in it is because I had to get picked up in it. Things like that. But as I got older, I said to Dad, I said, why did you buy that truck? Why that one? Because there were few around for a little bit more money at the time in a lot better condition. He said to me one day, he said, oh, I could have spent 15 more and I could have got one that was nearly ready for rego and had next to no rust. And I, as years went on, I said, why the friggin' hell did you buy that truck? You knew it was rusty and you'd have been through a fire, da 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 da. And he said to me, he said, Matt, when we went and picked it up, you were about 4 years old. And I said, yeah. And he said, when I was 4 years old, I remember that truck around the Shoalhaven region. I said, I'm going to own that one day.
Yep.
And that's why he bought that. Because when he was a kid, he said, I'm going to own that one day. So as much as he never fulfilled his dream of building it, he fulfilled his dream of owning that vehicle.
Yep.
So
I like that.
As I've gotten older, I sit down, I think, you know, that's a really special thing because there's kids out there that see probably nowadays that Magna sitting in a paddock and they go, I want to own that thing one day. And when they're old enough, they buy that Magna. And as much as it's nothing probably to me, to us, they told themselves at a young age they'll own that one day and they've fulfilled that dream. Mm.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah, and that's totally true.
Yeah.
It's true, and I think we've touched on this before. We go for the cars that are relevant to us. So if you're 27, I would fully expect you to have love affairs with VH Commodores because those cars were relevant to you when you were growing up.
Yep.
To us, as older guys, they were just shopping carts, you know, like,
yep,
just a regular, like probably what a Tesla is like to people today. You know, you just didn't look at
it. Cycle of life.
Yeah, it's a cycle of life. So I've learned not to judge on, you know, just because I don't like 1980s cars, you know, as much as I like 1950s cars, that doesn't mean that the 1980s cars are all rubbish. And it doesn't mean that the 1950s cars are better. It just works with whatever is relevant to you. And your story of your old man seeing in a truck and saying, I'm going to own that one day, I think that sort of rings the chord with pretty much all of us here is that everyone asks me, why did I get an FEFC Holdens? And it was purely because the neighbours had them on their farm. They seemed to have a lot of them. And they just went rusty in their front paddock. And I made a point of I knew I couldn't own those cars because they were way too rusty. So what I did is I built a replica FC ute and a replica FC sedan, and I parked them in the same location. I took photos when I was quite young, about 15, about 1981, 82. I took some photos, got to feed them, and looking across to the farm, and you could see these cars rusting in the paddock then. And I made the new cars, and I put them in those same positions, and I climbed up in the same feed bin, and I took the photo, except the cars weren't rusty anymore. They were all restored. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, cool. So,
it's
that meant nothing to anyone else on the planet, but it meant everything to me. And I'm so glad that I did that. And that's sort of very relevant of what you were saying, Matty, that your old man bought this rusty truck that couldn't be saved. He fulfilled his dream. All he wanted to do was own it.
Own that truck. And that's what I sit back now, and I respect that because he was young. You know, he was a little kid and he said he was going to own it and he stood to his word and he did. And, you know, I sit back now and I look at things like that. When I was at my previous job, there was a young bloke, I think he's lost his license now, but he was a red P-plater and he turned up to work one day and he's, oh, Matty, I'm getting a car on the weekend. I'm like, oh, right, dude, what are you buying? He's, oh, me and Dad are going to pick up a VP sedan, V6. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And I sat down and thought, yeah, it's just a VP, but it is the same to him as what my VH is to me. It's his entry into the scene.
Yep.
It's how he's getting in because it's cheap for him to get into, like the VH was for me. So I think they all that has their place as much as anything else. And he recently bought a VR or VS SS ute. They didn't do many of them from what I've heard. And he bought that for his 18th birthday.
Yep.
And I said to him, I said, don't ruin it. I know I sound like a purist, but I'm like, don't go out, thrash it, and do skids because they're hard to get bits for now.
I remember someone having an SSU, actually.
Yeah, well, I've still got an SSU down the front of the respray, but we're getting there. Yeah. And I said to him, you know, don't flog the absolute shit out of it because you can't go to the wreckers and get bits plentifully. These old 5 litres bits are getting hard to get because everyone's thrown a leg at. Well, everyone's thrown legs out of bed of them. Like, yeah, you can still get bits for them, but it is getting harder.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that right? VN Commodore onwards is hard to find now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
Scrap was good 20 years ago.
I'm looking at E-Series Falcons because I had them when I was younger and I want another one. And, you know, when I had E-Series Falcons, they were cheap and plentiful. I'm actually looking for an XG panel van as well because when I was an apprentice when I was an apprentice at work, we had a whole fleet of XG vans. And I don't think there's a refrigeration company in Australia that didn't have a fleet of Falcon panel vans at some point. And they were cool. I liked it because it was column change auto with a bench seat. And it was like driving your lounge room down the road.
Yeah, that's why I loved the first Commodore. You get a column shift and fucking bench seat and rubber floor mats. What the fuck? You know, like, I was amazed they carried that into Commodore.
Try finding a good one.
I'm still trying to get my head around that those cars are drying up in Australia now. I don't understand that.
New Zealand. It's just that good ones are hard to get. Most of them are very tired and need a lot of work. And particularly XG or XF, anything sort of with the utes and panel vans, XD onwards, because they've got that.
Do you know there's a heap of that stuff here in New Zealand for sale for fuck all money?
Yeah.
Like they've not dried up here. And you would think they would because everything rusts really good in New Zealand. So, look, I've been here in New Zealand 15 years, which meant 2008. I had to scrap some cars. I scrapped a perfectly good XD Falcon wagon that my nephew had given to me. It had LP gas on it. It's the only reason I let him drop it off at my place. And I laughed when he paid $4,000 for it because it was like a $400 car back then. He paid $4,000 for it. Anyhow, the rust got the better of it, but it was still super tidy. I took it to the wreckers and I got $100 for it in 2008, November 2008. I scrapped a Chimera and
Scotty's having a fit.
What the fuck?
A little VL, thank you very much.
I scrapped my miniature VL and I actually, I'll send you some photos because this car was legendary. I scrapped that and I laughed. I got $100 for it because you could still go to damaged vehicle auctions and buy a repossessed Chimera. I can't understand why someone would have a Chimera
repossessed. Who the fuck can't pay for a Chimera?
You pay $40 at auction for a Chimera in 2008. So obviously they weren't worth anything.
The same person
I got $100 for this car.
I've got to jump in while we're on Chimeras here. So I've got another pearl with selling my car. And anyone who's selling a car on Marketplace will cop the old "will you swap?" Now, a few years ago...
Do you want it clapped out dirt bike?
A few years ago, I was selling a 600-kilowatt BF Falcon that I owned. This would be close to 10 years ago now. And
swaps for a tinny.
No, swaps for a V-Rod Harley. So just every second bloke was messaging me wanting to swap a V-Rod Harley. I've got no interest in V-Rod Harleys.
And Denny Dave?
I don't think anyone does.
So, you know, I was politely declined about three or four of these. Anyway, so I copped this about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Would you be interested in swaps for a 1999 Yamaha jet ski and trailer and a 1985 Holden Chimera Project? Just painted BT1 yellow to build a mini VL.
I haven't seen it, maybe.
Well, a jet ski is a water Harley anyway, so you're halfway there.
Only if it comes with a mixed kebab. A mixed kebab with garlic, mate.
Yeah.
There's been a mini VT1 lately. I've seen it.
Hope it has mini interceptors on it.
Yeah. And this is the thing.
It actually does have mini
interceptors. Four studs.
Yeah, but regardless of Scotty having a deep and profound connection to Chimeras, there is some woman who's just turned 60 who had one as a nursing fucking student back in the day who would have one tomorrow in a heartbeat. And we could tell people, we could talk to her blue in the face about, you know, whether they're reliable, not reliable. None of it's going to have an impact because she just wants a fucking mirror.
I couldn't kill mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people just want to reconnect with those first cars.
And I still say mum's went 320,000. My sister's went 310,000. We did front CV joints. That was it. So, yeah, they had a couple
of pretty... that fast, really?
Ripper Camaras.
Wow. Well, actually... 320,000.
Man, they're a quick
fuckers. I'll tell you what, my HB with its small block and fucking auto wouldn't have been on the road if it weren't for mum's JB fucking Camaro that I could use to run up to the parts shop whenever I needed to. So
I didn't think Camaras were famous until they were in a Butterfingers song.
I've got to say,
I love Butterfingers.
I did sell recently a 1998 N15 Pulsar Triple S. Now, I bought that car, I bought it from a deceased estate, and I was going to use it as a track car as part of the car club I'm in. Time's got the better of me. I decided to move it on. Now, the guy who bought it off me was really keen on buying it, came and had a look, and we got talking as he was counting the money out to give to me, and he goes, I had one as my first car. Exactly the same color and interior, yeah. And it got written off in an accident, you know, a couple of months after I bought it, and I've never been able to find the exact same car, and this thing just cropped up, wow. And here I am to grab it, and I felt really good, yeah, about him taking it. It was unregistered, and it'd been sitting in my front yard for a couple of months. I'd done a fair bit of work to it to get it ready for a roadworthy, yeah. But I got this guy an unregistered permit so he could drive a car home, and the smile on him when he put the key in ignition and started up and drove out the driver, it was just a mile wide. And it was just a Triple S Pulsar. It had 300,000 Ks on it,
yeah.
But he was really, really happy to just be driving away in it.
That's a perfect example.
It's thrown him back.
Yeah, but
yeah.
You see, that's the sort of car where people see it on a club permit. And they'll bag it and they'll go, oh, look, like that shouldn't be, that's ruining the permit system. But hang on, that's a special car to that guy.
Yeah.
If he wants to get a car permit, drive it every so often, I've got no drama with that. But that's that same sort of opinionated thing, you know, where people.
Yeah. I see this in the car club I'm in. I'm in the Nissan Datsun Sports Owners Club in Melbourne. Now, we have, and I was saying this before, a lot of the guys in our club are 240, 260, Z. And fair lady sports car guys. But we do have a few Skyline owners and a lot of 300 ZX, like the Z32, the ones that look a bit like a Lamborghini with a Targa top. We've got a few of those. Now, they're on club permits because they're over 25 years old. Yeah. It's hard to believe that those cars are over 25 years old.
But that's the reality.
Over 25 years, so they fit the criteria. They're on a club permit.
Perfect.
Now, when we have the All Nissan Day down at Beau Morris on the foreshore there where the shops are, right near the water in Bayside, Melbourne. Not last show we had, I didn't have my car there, but someone made a comment that none of these cars should be on permits because they've got plastic bumpers.
Look, that person's obviously just a fuckstick. That's all that comes down to.
Well, hang on. You can put a VNSS. VNSS on a club permit. Is that any less deserving?
Yeah.
Like, AO's car could be on. Is he's on a club permit? I think he's. He's VR Club Sport.
No, he's got plates on it.
Has he got plates on it? Okay.
Mike's G-Van at the front on a club permit.
What? Who cares? Yeah, what does it matter that it doesn't have plastic bumpers?
Can you guys explain to me what the cost is for your club permits? Because I live in the land of luxury where we have no permit system. Like our rego for any car automatically, when it's 40 years old, it has to be 40 years old, not 25 or 30. Yeah. It has to be 40 years old. Our car rego, it's just skyrocketed from $47 a year to $54 a year. And we can drive it anytime, anywhere, no restriction. And we have no logbook system or anything like that. So, which is a real head spin that New Zealand can do that, but Australia can't. And Australia's got a much bigger population. So it obviously...
It just hasn't shipped back over the ditch yet.
It's not that Australia can't. It's that Australia won't.
Yeah.
There's too much money in rego.
What does it cost you to have a car on club permit?
Well, I think mine's
Queensland,
$60.
Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah.
Queensland's about $250 a year, but there's compulsory third party mixed up in that. That's why. You know, you'd remember, Andrew, Queensland rego was always so much more expensive than other states. Because of CGP, compulsory third party. Yeah. But $250 a year is better than $1,000 a year, so I'm not complaining.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I tried to bring CGP into New Zealand, but they're more of a weight.
Yeah,
what do you get? You get 90 days. Like here in Victoria, I think you get 90 days on your club permit of usage.
Yeah, my Fairlane's Vic, and my other's in New South, so. New South one's cheaper, but you only get 60 days.
I can't weigh in on that one because all my shit's full rego. Yeah.
Just for a moment, just imagine if Australia suddenly adopted the New Zealand system. What would that mean to you guys if you did away with your permits and suddenly your rego for your Classic, which had to be 40 years old, was only $54 a year? Would you drive them every day?
Yeah, well, my car was always meant to have an engineer's report, was always meant to go on full reg. I've got the Nasha plates sitting in the drawer. I want to get back onto that. Yeah, so, you know, 90 days. I mean, I blew up my engine 2 years ago, and thankfully I didn't. My logbook didn't fucking fill out, you know, because I was rebuilding a fucking motor. But I am that guy who would jump in his car every day, even just to go down the shops.
See,
I don't want to get back in that Renault traffic at the end of the day after doing my Melbourne run, you know, if I'm just going to the supermarket.
So how many of you drive your car like your Classic as an everyday car? How many of you do that?
My Bluebird is still registered in the ACT, but I've refused to put mine on a club permit because I refuse to go through the rigmarole of getting a roadworthy. The funny thing about moving in a state is when I moved from the ACT to Victoria, I can transfer the car into Victoria without having to get a roadworthy. Yep. But if I want to put it on a club permit, I need to get a roadworthy. I won't get a roadworthy because the car's got twin carbs on it. Yep. Now, I've spoken to a couple of people here in Victoria about getting a roadworthy and they won't even look at it. Now, my car's got pollution carbs on it, but they will not look at it because it's got twin carbies on it. So I won't even transfer it into Victoria. I've got all my cars are still registered in the ACT and I've still got an ACT license for that reason. And I'll just keep... Wow. I've still got a residence up there, so I'll just keep it that way until such times as it makes sense to do it. But it's just ridiculous that you've got to go and get a roadworthy to put something on a club permit. Yep. And then the other thing is, as someone who's looking at buying an older car, everyone's older cars are on club permits, which means as a buyer, I've got to obtain a roadworthy, which half the time means significant amount of re-engineering just to get a vehicle through a roadworthy, and they just tighten the roadworthy regs up here in Victoria, only to then have to undo all that work. It's just too much of a headache. So I'd rather just stick with the full rego, and I'm lucky enough that I'll have a company car. So, you know,
what's your rego cost for a year? How much does your rego cost?
For the Bluebird, there's about just under $1,000 because in the ACT, it goes on weight. So it's about, I think it's 1080 kilos, so it's just under $1,000 a year.
How about you, Simo? What's a V8 worth in Queensland now?
Oh, mate, it'd be getting up there. I think it's about $1,100 and something or $1,100. It's definitely up there for V8.
It's not $1,500? Someone said $1,500, getting close to $1,500.
I don't think it's that bad yet. Yeah, I'd have to check because, anything of mine, pretty much apart from my daily bash, like my Mazda, which is my daily bash now, everything else is on Club Rego. And that's so I kind of just use it for four cylinder. That'd be probably 650, I think, a gear. I can't even remember, to be honest. 680 perhaps.
Wow. My troop is about 1,000.
My tip truck here in New Zealand, I've got a 2019 Isuzu NPR 450, which is a 5-ton tipper, and my rego cost here in New Zealand is around about $400 a year for the truck.
Mm-hmm.
So
cheap.
Yeah. Well, I felt that was pretty expensive, but you know the weird thing, if you own a motorbike over here, it's $600 a year for a motorbike.
Yeah,
and that's
Queensland motorbikes have just gone up too. Yeah. Yeah, single seat is you may as well have a twin seater. Yeah,
we have a bit like you've got Medicare. We've got a different system here. It's like a health system, and it's the name actually escapes me at the second. But basically, you've got to pay.
I just want you to say Warren of Futness. That's all I want.
Warren of Futness. There you go.
Yeah.
Walk and cough.
As of 5th of January 2024. To register a 7 or 8 cylinder vehicle in Queensland will cost you approximately $1,232.10 a year.
Wow.
How many people are registered in 7 cylinder vehicles?
Well, then the next part of that says 9 to 12 cylinders.
That's for the LSs that throw a leg in.
That was going to be my comment, DD. Thank you very much.
I can 7 cylinder.
Is that for the hybrids?
I don't know. Pre-48 on permit rego, you don't need a roadworthy, but, you know, you probably got to be historic, as in historically accurate, not running tunnel rammed fucking 308s in cars that never had them.
I think that's the difference between your H and your M plates down here in Victoria, isn't it? One's got to be period correct, and one has to, if it's not period correct, it needs to be an M plate.
Needs to be an engineer's report to get an M plate.
That's only on new regos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you can't just walk in and ask for an M plate instead of a H plate. You've got to go in there with your engineer's report.
Yeah, yep. But it's like my Fairlane, everything on that's 100% engineered.
Yeah.
And it was, and it's been like that forever. And when I put that onto Club Rego, I thought it would have to go onto an M plate.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It's just normal historic.
Yeah.
Because because it's still as it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. The old time capsule.
And I think the H plate comment before from Skenny, when you said about the plastic bumper scenario, I was only having this conversation with Moses last time we had a chat about a fortnight ago.
Yep.
About age of the person as well. Like Denny's panel van, it's on H. I bet my balls for many reasons. No one will turn around and give Denny shit because it's on H plates. But if I turned up to a car show with it on H plates, it'd be, why is this thing on H plates? The whole age, the difference of age, I see, comes into factor with a lot of things like that.
Yeah,
you call me old.
I mate.
Well, to put it into perspective, maybe AU Falcons are eligible for Club Rego because they debuted in 1998. Yep, so there you go.
Yeah, and I was going to make that.
That's a historic vehicle.
Well, I had my little moment down the local hamburger cart the other week where the highway patrol officer pulled in and I'm trying to walk past me number plates as he's fucking pulling in his unmarked car just so he maybe couldn't read them. He's like, who owns this thing? And I said, oh, it's mine. He said, geez, I like that. He said, I need to swap you. I said, what, are you an enthusiast? You got something at home, have you? He goes, no, for this. It was his Passat fucking highway patrol wagon. I said, mate, I'd be fucking tempted. And we just had a bit of a chuckle. But then he's basically rang the other officer, the other buddy D that was working in town, just to say, hey, it's a bit quiet. You may as well knock off. Like, made a point of having this phone call pretty loudly in front of the group of lads that were there. And then just said, oh, well, see us all later. And drove out. And the boys are going, he's a bit of an arsehole. I said, well, not in that fucking moment he wasn't, but I think putting the old grey beard in amongst those 20-somethings definitely made a fucking difference.
I actually got a thumbs up from a highway patrol in the van on the way here.
Yeah.
I thought, shit, what have I done wrong? I looked in the mirror, I'm like, is this guy going to do a U-turn or what?
Yeah, no.
Isn't that how they sex crocodiles over there? They shove their thumbs up their asses.
Yeah, something like that.
I only had someone mention to me the other day about an XG van running around town, which is Luke Jordanopoulo, and it just sits low and it's got a visor and it's just a white fucking van. But, yeah, mate, bloke that's got this XE ESP in Ballarat, he just sees it every morning and he just fucking loves seeing it, you know. And, yeah, Luke wanted a hot rod, basically. He said to me one day on we had a garage crawl and he's driving Brenny C's little bloody roadster pickup. But he said he's always had a dream to have a hot rod and drive and turn up at Hodgie's because he's a different demographic to me. You know, I've had Hodgie as a bloody older brother since I was a kid. But, yeah, to see Luke there rolling in that little T-Roads to pick up and, you know, it was a dream he'd had forever. And he'll build something cool. You know, he's playing with the crown at the moment. He's just got on the road and a whole heap of stuff I don't quite comprehend. But, you know, good on him. Out having a go. And I suppose that's the other underlying thing. If you're doing nothing but attacking people who are having a fucking red hot crack, then you need to have a real good look at yourself and fucking pull out.
You need to check yourself.
Yep. Before you wreck yourself. Agreed.
You're stopping the young people.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, you're stopping the young bloke from having a go. If you're going to sit there, same as that young fellow I used to work with, if I sat down and bagged him for going to be proud to buy a VN or VP, he's never going to go build nothing because everyone else is going to be a critical clap on him. Because it doesn't align with them.
Yeah, shout out to Moses Jr., Brody Borg, just smiling with his little fucking Corolla, and it's all he could afford, but he's painting white lettering on the tyres, and it's got a couple of stickers on it, and it's got its own little bloody point of difference, you know?
Oh, good on him. He's having a go.
Exactly.
It's actually funny. I went through, I got the baby coming in a couple of weeks, so we're having a bit of a clean out at home. I went through a few old Street Machine magazines from the 80s, early 90s, where there's the letters section. And the commentary in some of those magazines where guys were having a whinge about You know, Street Machine did pioneer having four cylinders and rotaries. They did feature a number of rotaries in the late 80s, early 90s.
That's it.
Yep.
They had, you know, I hope I say his name right, Todd DeIlbo, that Gemini that was at Summoner, so Gemini sedan, yep. You might remember from the early 90s.
Gizmo.
Gizmo, there you go. Jago Ostrich with his elite build Gemini. Aaron Fitzpatrick with the 1600. Like, there's been plenty of iconic Japanese-based cars.
What about that RX-7 that was on the Penrod ads?
The
bad
blue
RX-7.
Supercharged.
Yeah, it was a blower. Yeah, the blower was bigger than the motor.
Apparently that car's still around.
Yeah.
There was also
I have heard that.
So the first ever Street Machine I got as a nine-year-old kid was, I think it was September 89. I still got it at home. And in the back of that was Con and Vic Elf from C&V Performance in Sydney.
One Tonner Boys.
Yeah, the One Tonner Boys. Now, they built a yellow RX-3 with baby one on the number plates, yellow with yellow V4 Simmons, and it had a 13B peripheral port with a 371 blower on it.
Yep.
And that was in Street Machine. Yep. And, you know, they're reading through some of these older magazines as I was boxing them up. The people were then had the audacity to actually put a handwritten letter in the mail criticising the magazine for featuring Japanese cars because, you know, they were jackcrap and they had no place in car culture in Australia. But
one of those guys sent you a message.
Same
sort of people that would send you the whole Nissan Datsun thing.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that bloke took the time to point out that, you know, it's a Datsun, not a Nissan. It's actually the other way around, but never met the truth getting away with good yarn.
So you saved him the cost of a stamp.
Yeah. I did him a favour. He should thank me for that. But, you know, like, Street Machine kind of pioneered crossing the boundaries, if you like. They featured rods. They featured custom cars. They featured panel vans. They've always had groundbreaking cars.
They had that loader in there at one point as well, in like the 90s, wasn't it?
I remember that thing. Yep.
Yeah,
you know, like talking about differences.
There is Dave now showing his colours.
But, you know, like, they've always been there and they've always kind of crossed that. And people have always done their best to disrespect it at certain points. But I think social media makes it a lot easier. I know we did touch on this last episode. It makes it a lot easier to just shoot your mouth off. You know, if you're that way inclined, you can get on there and shoot your mouth off and make a dickhead yourself.
I mean, is there someone today who's looking at the little Swift that they've got a daily around who's looking at Jack Mills for inspiration? You know, like, fucking, because, things do just fucking evolve, don't they?
Well, there's a classic case of but using what's available to you.
And if you're going to feature a broader range of cars, you know, there might be bloody some Street Machine that you take on an i30 that all of a sudden someone's at home in their shed playing with their fucking i30, you know.
Well, I'll never forget.
There's room for everything.
I'll never forget Chick Henry saying, it would have been early 2000s when auto selling was at its peak. Now, when I was an apprentice, I had no money, so I drove four-cylinder cars because that's all I could afford.
Yep.
And then I had an accident in my 70s Mazda, and the only car I could really afford to buy was a TX3 Laser. So that's what I bought.
Yeah.
And, you know, by simply owning a 90s Japanese fuel injected car, I kind of found myself drawn to the Hot Fours magazines and the auto salons because I could connect with those cars.
Yeah.
And at the time, my old man had a Swift.
Yeah.
As his daily. And it was just kind of, okay, well, we've got small cars. Let's see what we can do with these things to make them fast and enjoy them because I don't have the budget.
Too.
And now I remember Chick Henry having a couple of the Cyber Hondas at Summonats in the early 2000s and people just losing their mind over it. Why have you got this Jap shit here? And he's like, nah, they're techno cars. You've got to look past the actual platform of the and look at the innovation and the modifications that these guys are doing to these cars. And you wind the clock forward to maybe 2004, 2005, and we did see it in the Street Machine and we've seen on social media, there's Sexpec VS Commodore Utes that are airbrushed and big stereos, like the Roman Autotech Ute.
Yep.
The Psycho Ute.
I don't know if everyone remembers the EA two-door EA convertible that the Roman Autotech built. And so, you know, there's always been some sort of crossover between, you know, a Sexpec car doesn't have to be a Jap four-cylinder. And a Street Machine doesn't have to be a V8 rear-wheel drive.
Like, yeah, absolutely, skinny.
There's different you can utilize, you can cross different platforms with different build styles.
Yeah.
And probably the best best thing I've seen encapsulate that is perhaps a mini truck.
Yep.
Because Andrew's got an L200, right? Now he's done a step side and he's doing it as a 70s custom, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
But in America in the 80s and the 90s, it was all Datsun 720s.
Yeah.
Have a look at any American 80s, 90s. You can go on Instagram and search it out.
Do you know what New Zealand did with their Nissans? They couldn't sell in 1980. They had 200 Nissan Utes that they just couldn't sell in 1980, 1981. One of my panel beater mates...
Because they were listening to wrong, sold my Andrew. Little
Daihatsu Charade to.
They're not Nissans, they're Datsuns, mate. Do you want me to send you the release ad?
Yeah, you could. I honestly need schooling on this Jack stuff. I'm not really up to speed with it. But anyhow,
put the hot link in the mail.
Little, they couldn't sell these... I think they were Datsun, Datsun Utes. You may have heard of them, and they're in New Zealand only. They made 200 of them. And it's one of the things that gave me the inspiration to go down the route that I'm going with the L200.
And
they sold them as Nissan Beachcombers. That's what they were called over here.
Yes, I have heard of these. So the Nissan
Beachcomber was a cut-down square body step-side truck. So it was a C10, like a 78 C10 guards, and they were cut down and just a basic box. They were ugly as all hell. But the dealers turned around and put those turbo thrust mags on them, or they put all sorts of sort of, you know, like cheap 1970s mag wheels on them, that sort of thing. And they sold every last one of them. Today, they are super collectible. But my L200, I got on, because I'm trying to find parts for it, they don't have parts for these things anywhere. You've got to sort of look further afield, and you go to the US. And in the US, an L200 was sold as a Dodge D50. Now,
that's
Dodge,
right.
They were sold here in Australia as a D50 as well, I think, Simon.
That's right.
And that's exactly right. They were sold here as that as well. Yep.
Yeah. So the Dodge made the little red Ram. And if you recall the little red Ram,
yeah, it was a full size Dodge
truck with the twin stacks, and they're normally painted red. And they're all pinstriped up straight, like a show truck. But they were straight from the factory showroom floor. Now, in the L200, the Dodge D50, which is what the L200 was called in the States, they actually made a stepside L200. Those ugly as all sin. They just got them completely wrong, and they just looked disgusting. But they are super collectible because they only made a handful of them, like 1,500 of them or something like that. But I saw those, and I thought, so this thing actually did exist. I'm not actually building something that never existed. So I thought, well, maybe I can use the flavour of that. And I don't like red, so I won't be going red. But I bought a 68 Chevy.
Nice guys. Red's all right.
But anyhow, I bought a 68 Chevy stepside rear. I got stepside guards, like steel, rust-free, Californian rust-free stepside guards. Over here, and I bought the pair of them for with running boards, the whole bit, $500 Kiwi, which is about like $3 Australian. So, so basically, the whole deal was, and this sort of goes right back to what we were talking about before and what Maddie was talking about and Scotty, is I think the future lies in we can't afford all the classics like we used to be able to afford them. And I'm still trying to get my head around what you guys were saying, that VN, VP Commodores and that sort of thing are worth billions of dollars there. But to me, they're still modern cars. But you start having a play with the stuff that is worthless, that at the moment is still worth $100 or $200. And those are the sort of cars you can pick up. I get donated so many L200s now because people go, oh, you play with L200s. Do you want mine? You want to see my yard now? It's just full of bloody, you know, dead and unloved L200s. And a lot of these cars are in pretty good condition. And I'm thinking, I can keep having fun with cars and spend $0, just lots of time. And I can do all of this and I can do my customizing and all that sort of thing if I want to. Okay, the platform isn't exactly what I would love to do, but I think you just go where the money is or isn't.
And you're still keeping it alive.
that's the bottom line. It's where is the future?
14-year-old me had a 57 Chev, 6-cylinder, 3 on the tree. He used to fucking yell and scream and point at Chevy Loves because they were fucking wrong. You know, you can't have a Japanese fucking ute with a fucking big bow tie on the fucking tailgate. That was atrocious. I didn't expect I was going to own a Chevy Love at 54, which is still just sitting in the shed waiting for its start.
Well, there's an old panel beater mate of mine here. He actually inspired me, Robin Barnes, and he's on the Legends group. I invited him over there. Robin's a Kiwi panel beater. He's in his late 60s, and one of his cars he was famous for was a Chevy Love ute that was sort of pink and green. It was one of those weird 70s sort of a like a real bright magenta pink with a sort of like a seafoam green middle, and it had a 283 tunnel ram Chevy in it and side pipes. I saw that and I went, I can do that to the L200 because they look very, very similar. An L200 and a Chevy Love ute are nearly the same car to look at. And my whole deal with the L200, it had to cost me $0. I can't spend money on it. I've sort of blown the budget a bit because I went and bought Chevy stepside parts, but I can turn around and resell those, which I won't, and get double the money back.
You spent a dollar. You've done it.
Yeah, that's it. I've spent a dollar, so I'm sort of committed now. But then some of you may have picked up that I was playing around with some lace, some curtain lace.
Undies?
Sorry. Not the first time I've heard that.
Making undies.
Making undies.
Yeah. As long as you're not sniffing it, it's okay.
Unless they're your own.
Yeah. So
that's a different term of smelling skids.
Basically, you've just got to keep looking where you can have fun. The fun can be had without spending a lot of money on it, and that's sort of what I've always been about. When I fronted up at the Summonats in 2001 in the FC Coupe, or 2002 in the FC Coupe, I drove it from Brisbane, and I got absolutely arseholed out of the judging hall because they said, mate, you can't enter in street class. That's obviously an elite class car. And I said, no, I just drove it from Brisbane. They refused to believe me. And Chick Henry came up and he says, you're having a bit of trouble there, mate. And I says, yeah, they don't believe I drove this car from Brisbane. And he looked at me and he goes, I don't believe you drove it from Brisbane either. Then Milton 80 wandered over and he goes, Andrew, he said, that thing looked awesome coming down the Hume Highway. And I says, thank you. And I drove it twice to Summonats, and twice at Summonats I picked up all these awards and things. And the whole point I was trying to make, that car owes me less than $15,000. And you didn't have to spend a ton of money to have the biggest impact. And that's been my thing that I've been trying to push with all the young guys and new guys that are entering into this game. You can have a lot of fun customizing, but you don't have to spend a shit ton of money. You just got to have a little bit of nous on how to do a bit of dealing, and you've just got to have a bit of a drive and want to do the work yourself. Don't keep on farming it out to everyone else.
Chad Rubens is on record. That HDU, he reckons with a bit of wheeling and dealing, probably owed him $6,500 win street right. machine of the year. You know, and again, that was a learning curve for him, just the work on that ute. But, you know, to just set out on that path and come in the morning and go, fuck, that rust repair's atrocious. I better cut it out and start over. And that was the way he built that ute. But $6,500 and just captured the fucking hearts and imagination and took the trophy.
That's how I finance my car stuff is, you know, I wheel and deal. I don't wheel and deal, but I do buy and sell a lot of stuff. Parts, cars, bits and pieces, and any profit that gets made just gets tucked away along with the overtime and whatever else.
Well, that's the only way I can build my cars. I've got to sell stuff, and I've got to sell lots of it, and I've got to sell it cheaply so people keep on coming back. I couldn't sell the stuff that I have here for the prices they're asking in Australia because I'd have no customers whatsoever. So I've got to sell stuff cheap enough that people go, hey, this guy Andrew's all right. So instead of coming and spending $500 on one item, they'll turn up here and spend $3,000 or $4,000 cash and buy a whole heap of shit, and a lot of it is just shit in my opinion. And, you know, I sell a lot of stuff. They think they're having a win. I'm having a win because I'm getting all this money from the parts. They're having a win because they're not having to pay Australian prices for stuff. And what they do with it when it leaves here is not really my concern, but I had to stop selling parts to Australia because it was just getting really rude. I'd sell like a heater over here, like a heater duct, which is a rare thing in Australia, but super common over here. I'd sell a heater duct for like, or a pair of them for $50. And then I'd see them on online the moment they hit the shores over there for $250.
Yeah, the old profiteering.
You know, people were buying stuff on me cheap and then turning around and making a heap of money out of it. And that was going on over and over and over again. And I just said, you know what, I'm not going to keep selling stuff to the Aussies. So unless they could prove to me it was actually going on their car and they just weren't turning around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's a really...
I actually need to peel off, gentlemen. I need to finish up.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And
you can leave.
So just before I go, though, Scotty, do you need to do something to save my audio? And secondly, apologies for the mowing noise in the background. It's pitch black. My neighbour's mowing his yard with a spotlight on his hat. Right? So...
Is it the last thing neighbour from next door?
We need a visual on that.
The other side.
If he'd used a fly mower, he'd be right.
Yeah, that's right. It's just the last thing I expected was to have mowing noise in the background tonight. So my apologies.
Does your neighbour get on the cook, Simo? Because that's something I would have done at like 18 years old with me and a few of my mates after a few too many beers. So like, let's go mow the lawn.
Yeah. No, he works stupidly long hours, I think, and he's just doing whatever he can in the time he has available. Yeah. It just looks really weird. There's a flash of light going past the window.
Got a dolphin torch strapped to his head while he's mowing the lawn.
Got any closing thoughts before we let you leave the room, mate?
Mate, I guess at the end of the day, just be more worried about what you're doing in your own backyard than what other people are doing in theirs. Like, you know, when we get to the point at the end of our lives and meet our maker, whoever that may be, you know, you want to think back and just be happy that you achieved what you achieved without worrying about what other people thought. You know, that's, I think, what it comes down to.
Yeah, no, I like that.
So, yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Nah, all good. You've earned your keep right there.
Simo, I'm not sure about, I've never had to do this before, but perhaps if you just turn off your webcam and mute your audio and just leave everything running.
Yeah.
And then come back to the laptop later, unless you need it right now. But
it's sideways, Simo.
No, that'll be fine. I'll do that. So I'll say goodbye.
Just make sure you turn the camera off so when you have a bat.
Yeah.
I did that this morning. I need to regenerate.
Simon Major, thanks very much for joining us on this little mission, mate.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks for having me. And nice to chat with you all.
We'll talk to you
all again soon.
No worries at all. Andrew's going to give us his goss on you now. See ya.
Okay. Oh, that's fine.
See ya, Simon.
Yeah, I've heard all before. See ya.
See ya, mate.
See ya, Simon.
Hey, there we go.
Oh, look, he's now a red moon.
Yeah.
We got a red moon here, I'm sure. A fucking bushfire raging in the district.
Around. Yeah, I think it's... It's really interesting to see the way people are very vocal about personal taste. It's not a good reflection on those individuals, but I don't know.
I'm sort of starting to think too, like when I was hinting towards Matty maybe doing the Trans Am front onto his van, but I've seen people now start to go down the custom path. Just to test people's fucking manners. Yeah, it's slowly
happening again.
Well, it's a perfect test of manners, you know. If you do something that you want to do to your car that you're really passionate about and then someone wants to just stand there and fucking hate and spew venom at you, well, you realise you don't need to stand there with that person anymore.
Probably the best example of manners I can give in recent times is Summonat's 35 Grand Champion, the Real Steel Porsche 911.
Yep.
Now, that was a bloody neat car.
That was a beautiful car.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Now, that car was at Motorex. It was at Summonats. It won Grand Champion. It's a driver. They're actually I've followed that shop for a long time, even before the Porsche was built. But those guys are out there driving the wheels off that thing in motorsport events and whatever. That's a car that's been built for a purpose. Yes, it's a Grand Champion car, but it's also getting the wheels driven off it. But didn't the commentary around that Some of the commentary around that was nothing short of disgraceful.
Yep.
Because people couldn't see past the fact that it was an air-cooled rear engine European car.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that were just spitting vitriol about it having no place in Summonats just, you know, couldn't just didn't get it. It went over a lot of people's heads. And a lot of people proved themselves to be outright dickheads with the way they carried on about it.
Some of the people that were commenting on that car, a couple of them were actually high-level builders, names or nothing mentioned, but they had cars in there as well. And we actually had a car in the Elite Hall that year as well. Mate Stu's bloody Dodge. We drove up to Cruise and ended up in the Elite Hall.
Yeah.
A couple of these people that commented, I know for a fact the cars they had in there did not have one type of fluid in the car at all.
Been a common thing for years.
Yeah, and they're opinionating on a car that was a driver.
Yep.
I'm thinking, well, maybe you guys should pull up because, it might be your secret that your cars don't run, but there's a few of us that know.
Yeah.
And I think
we weren't all born in the last shower of rain.
Mm.
No, that's it. And AO's been picking buddy BMWs and Jags and anything a bit like in that European front that comes along. Yep. I mean, he stamped his identity into this bloody street machine culture in the last 2.5 fucking years, and that he's drawn to that stuff.
And that particular Porsche, that was so well built.
It was a beautifully turned out car. And the reality is that, read into this what you will, but the street machine movement, just by virtue of it being in Australia, is centered around Australian produced rear wheel drive V8 cars. Now, whether that's Valiant, General Motors, or Ford is not really all that relevant. But how many times are we going to see a GT Falcon in the Elite 60 or on the cover of a street machine? It's been done to death. And I'm not saying that from a position of I'm sick of seeing it. I'm just saying it from a reality that it is what it is. Look through the 40-year history of street machine.
Yep.
Right? It's all been done 1,000 times before 1,000 different ways. So when someone drops a Porsche in the Elite 60 hall, not only have they built a beautifully turned out motor car and they've had a plan and they've stuck to it, and okay, it's a shop built, fair enough, right? But it's beautifully turned out and the car does what the owners wanted it to do, and it's a Porsche. That BMW with the V8 in it that was at Motorex, I think that's been featured in Street Machine. I'll have to cast my mind back.
Has.
But again, I pulled over that car at Motorex in Melbourne, and that was a fantastically turned out car, and it's got a beautiful engine in it, and the thing sounds awesome. So, is it a Street Machine? 100%.
Yeah. And
it fits the criteria just because it's not a Kingswood or a Commodore or a Falcon or a Cortina or whatever.
Gel to what you want it to be.
And Dave touched on it earlier, like when we were even in his Never Late 8 and that, like they were all cheap as fuck. That's why 18-year-olds had HT fucking Monaros and fucking shit. LX hatchbacks all that shit because they were worth fucking nothing.
Yep.
But so now the bloke who's 70 that can afford to buy a fucking LX hatchback isn't about to go down that show fucking scene or less likely to. And the young guys that are 19 and 20, they've got to find a way into this fucking scene, and it's not by building fucking things they can't afford to start with.
Yep.
But just fucking stretching the definition a bit, I guess,
that's
Maddie.
How you end up.
Yeah, man.
I want to harp my little bit on that too. Like, I've been seeing a lot with the controversy of being able to enter into Summonats at the moment, and to be honest, it's fucked. To be able to enter, like, just the way entries were releasing at, say, 11 o'clock and you've got to try and fight your bidding war sort of thing.
That's getting out of hand.
They've changed it.
Yeah, I missed out. I didn't get in.
Get the lump hammer out. I was lucky. I got in off loyalty and Dad got in off loyalty. So keep in mind, my old man's gone to every Summonats as an entry.
He's in a very small group that's been there.
He's in the small few.
I've only pulled fucking Skenny in here because he'll be able to get me through the fucking gate, I reckon. only joking.
I'll pull on my local.
With Dad, he had his Facebook and everything hacked a few years ago and his email address had to change and all that shit. And he didn't get a loyalty thing per the email. So he rung them up and he said, didn't puff the chest of who he is, but he said, I've had to do this my young blokes got one because I've entered for the last however many years, da-da-da-da-da. And they went through the records and they said, yeah, we've seen that you've entered every one. What's your new email address? We're sending it now.
Yep.
So he got in because my view is that there's two parts of what I want to say, but my view is for people like my dad, Mark Cannon, etc., they've entered every summonance. They should be the first people to, do they get a loyalty email and say, hey, we're throwing this out,
yeah,
put your bid in. If your car's not good enough and you don't get accepted, so be it. But you've been there to everyone.
Yeah.
Do you get the email? Because
yep,
without them, where would we be? And my other part of the conversation is, through the way the entries have been hard, I've seen a lot of people say, oh, get rid of these Commodores and these FGs and fuck them off. What I want to say is, right, I own, my everyday car is a Hot House Green VY-SSU, 2003, so 21 years old, right? People are bagging them out and saying, let's not fucking see them there. And I get it. A lot of people, it is sort of done to death at the moment. But one, it's what some people can afford. Two, tell me, what was the first car to win Grand Champion at Summonats?
A two-year-old VL.
And that is my exact point. Not taking away anything at all from what Rob's done and what he achieved, because yep, he achieved greatness. But if I was to build that green SS of mine to the exact same as Rob's caliber,
yep,
I bet there'd still be something, you know, just put a hard lid on it, da-da-da-da-da, and locked it shut, there'd still be someone to turn, and a flat bonnet, there'd still be someone to turn around and say, oh, fucking late model Commodore, fucking get rid of it. Yeah. Not think the fact that it's 21 years old, you've spent X amount of money, you've achieved this vision. And I know for a near fact that if you turned around and said, well, hey, bud, what one in 88? Oh, a two-year-old VL. It'd be, oh, no, but that's different. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's precise.
That's what some people can. And that's what burns me up, because I know guys that can't afford a VH like what I've got. They can't afford a HQ like what I've got. They can't afford a big block, whatever.
Yeah.
But they can afford to build a VF or VE SS,
yep,
put a big cam in it, underbonnet, da-da-da-da. It's no different to when people refer to a 253 or a 308 as a bloody plastic toy. Oh, why would you build one of those plastic toys? Because it's what they could afford.
Yep.
Yeah, and those that's plastic where it toys are all sudden cool again now.
Yeah, well, I went fucking deer because we started.
Exactly right.
We started the podcast and my fucking 308 got smoky and AO goes, oh, I suppose you're going to put an LS in it. And I said, well, I fucking can't now, can I? Fucking never laid with the 308. I'd be a fucking hypocrite.
Yeah,
but,
plastics are out of fashion.
Cost me a lot of money to go as slow as I went. You know, could have bought a Commodore for the same money and put all the gear in it.
It's always been like that too, that why they were called the plastic toy. And my engine builder, Jimmy C, he explained this to me well, because I didn't really know. And he's like, man, when I was he started his apprenticeship in 97 when I was born. And he used to say to me, he's like, you wouldn't really build a 308, because what you could build a decent 308 for, you could build a pretty wild 350.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, so there was that part and parcel. And that's what gets me with the frustration of reading about people wanting to enter some of those. Yeah, they've got Camaros, they've got Novas, da-da-da-da, all great cars in their own right. But they turn around and make that comment on Commodores that are 20-odd years old. That's no different. Were they doing that on Titch Meiling's angry EH when it entered and, you know, featured in 1991 in Street Machine? You know, they weren't doing that. They were still around the 20, like mid-20-year-old car. You know, so like that's a bit of my frustration.
What do you reckon the future is now? Is it sort of heading more towards a bit of a mix of everything? Like, I've been listening to you guys to try and get my head around this thing there, but is it a bit of a mix of everything? So you've now got Jappers, you've got Euros, you've got a lot of everything. And is that because the dinosaur type guys, you know, the hot rodding went the same way as well, because originally everything was 32 Fords, Model A Fords. and sometimes 36s and 34s and that sort of thing. But hot rodding eventually started to die out of it because they weren't bringing in any new blood or newer cars. And that's where I was able to enter the scene with a radical custom, but it still had to be pre-1965. And so by bringing in that new blood, and then from there on, it started to get watered down even more because, like you're saying, you guys are talking about Commodores, you know, late model, you know, perceived late model Commodores that are now sort of pretty much the normal fodder for building street machines out of. So where is the future heading? I mean, all these, like, not everyone's going to have a HQ anymore.
I think, Andrew, you're right. No. What it's coming down to really is attainability. Rear-wheel drive cars.
So, okay, so you've got attainability and then you've got the other main factor, which is relevance. What is relevant to the people that are building these cars? What are the cars they grew up with?
Well, this is the thing. There's two things. There's relevance to what people like and what they grew up with and they had in the family or what was available in their domestic market. You know, bear in mind, we've got a lot of people that weren't born in Australia that have come, moved to Australia as immigrants. They're into whatever's popular in their home country as well. So you've got to factor that in. There's what's attainable. The rear-wheel drive V8 platforms, right? Commodores, Falcons, Kingswoods, they're all expensive. Yeah. Right, whether you're buying a VB or a VF or an XD or an FG, it doesn't matter. They're all dear, right?
Yeah.
And for someone like myself, you know, I've got a fiance, two kids, so my budgetary, I can afford to go and buy an XD, but I don't want to put that sort of money into a car because I've got other things I want to do as well. So that's why I'm driving around in a Bluebird that's cost me, less than 10 grand. Because it's easy and it's attainable and I enjoy it and it owes me nothing, that car.
Well, the enjoyment, that's the best thing out of it. As long as you enjoy it, who cares?
100%. But what's attainable, like I bought myself a D21 Navara a couple of years ago because I picked it up off a bloke. It was an impulse buy. I picked it up for I think I paid $1,500 for it. And I changed a dizzy cap and got this thing started. And then I started looking at, do I turn this into a, I'm not really into mini trucks with airbags and that, but do I just slam this thing on the boards and put a nice set of wheels on it and just cruise in it with my fiance and my son because it's got air conditioning and it's automatic?
Yeah.
And do I rip the motor out and just drop an LS in it because it's a full chassis car and it's easy to do? So, and that's attainable. That was an $1,800 car. There's no way on God's green earth I'm going to get anything. I'm a Ford guy. There's no way I'm going to get an XD, an XE, an XF for anything under 10 grand. No. So
that ship sailed a long time ago.
100%. So, if I want to do something with a V8, I mean, I'm looking at E-Series Falcons now, but, a good E-Series Falcon with a 302 in it is a $20,000 car. And that's your project start point is 20 grand. You're going to tip double that into it.
Yeah.
So, it's what's attainable to people.
And it comes with what's changed too. Like my VH, for example, we bought it because I needed a car and I've got it off a guy that I worked with and it had 6 months wear and all that jazz. And Dad said to me, he's I wanted to buy a panel van. I looked at a panel van a week before for $5,000 with no rego.
Yeah.
And if we had our way, and if we had the money, we would have bought both. And the VH was only going to be a car to have until I could buy a panel van to daily. And then I fell in love with it and here we are. But my old man, he was a bit funny with it when I bought it because he was that generation of like, fuck, would you want a VH for?
Yeah.
You know, he was that sort of guy. Like we've talked about VNSSs and he's like, Matty, I remember going to the pub and a young bloke would come up and be like, oh, stick man, missus is pregnant or I've got a big tick bill, whatever. I need to get rid of my VN. Do you want to buy it? And he'd be like, how much do you want for it? Oh, few hundred bucks or, if you buy me two cases of Jack Daniels. And Dad said, if I knew what I knew now, I would have been getting a lot of bloody cases of Jack Daniels for people because that foresight wasn't there to what that'd be worth.
No.
And the funny thing that I sit down with Dad and we actually laugh about it now because he's fallen in love with the VH a bit more than what I have at times. And he bought the 55 in 83. So 41 years ago, My VH is an 83.
You reckon he'd put an interior in it by now?
And we both sit there and... Pardon?
I said, you reckon he'd put an interior in it by now?
No, not him.
It's awesome. It is. I love that thing.
You got to come for a cruise in it.
We've lost Andrew out of the room. He can still hear us, but I'm just wondering, Scotty, whether that's the settings on the program that can only go for so long. And, yeah, I don't know whether we've timed out on our...
Maybe they turned the power off in New Zealand this time, don't they?
Oh, that could be it too. Yeah.
I think my dropout was more me two cans and a piece of string that I was using as an internet connection.
If it works, it works. But, yeah, like with Dad's car... And my car, being both, he got his in 83 and mine's an 83 model. We sit down and we say to each other, so you bought the Chev in 83 at 25 years old. This is what you could have bought at a new car at the Holden dealership.
Yeah.
And that's the cool relation that we sit down. So when you bought this in December 83, Jeffrey, this was a brand new six-cylinder Commodore that you could have bought. And just to sit there and get that relation is what we laugh about. The fact that they're both, he's had it for 41 years and one's 41 years old. And it's like, this was the brand new LDV ute at the time sort of thing.
Yeah.
So when you put it into that perspective, it really winds him back. He's like, yeah, man, I remember, you know, Mrs. Downey, she bought a VH Commodore brand new, for example. I hope your mum didn't buy a VH Commodore brand new, Danny. But
no. My old man bought a VB brand new. Fucking worst mistake he ever made.
You've got to look at it
eight times and killed one of his mates after he'd sold it to him.
You've got to look at it in perspective too. Like a VH Commodore in 1983 would have been a substantial purchase for the average Aussie worker back then.
Yep.
I think that's something that gets lost on particularly the younger generation when they look at value of cars and things is they look at, oh, you could pick up a SLE Commodore or a XE ESP Fairmont, you know. Oh, they're only 20 grand new. Yeah, but, man, you were buying houses for 40,000.
Yeah, and at the same time, exactly. An XE GT was 7.
Yeah.
This is right. Yeah. But, you know, the average worker was probably only taking home $300 a week. So you've got to put it all in perspective. We've touched on this a couple of times before, but it's just the same thing, right? I'll look at the Falcon market, the XR to XF Falcon market in particular, right? XY GTs were the hot car. Anyone who was into GT Falcons wanted a phase three.
Yeah.
They got squeezed out of XYs, so they bought an XW. They got squeezed out of XWs, so they went to an XA or an XB or an XR or an XT, right?
Yeah.
Then market demand started to increase. Those prices went up. The guys that got squeezed out of XAs and XBs reluctantly went and bought XC GXLs because they were the last with a 3.51 and a 9-inch.
Yep.
And then the Fairlanes and LTDs have largely been ignored, but those guys then moved
into Landau.
They're a love-hate car. But, you know, those guys that couldn't afford an XR to XB, you know, your hero car, then went and looking for XD Fairmont Gears or XE Fairmont Gears and ESPs because they had 3.51s in it. Or now they're expensive, and particularly with Fords, because the V8 was discontinued, people had nowhere to go. So prices just continued to increase and increase and increase and increase. Like, I'd love an XE ESP. There's no way I'm forking out six figures for an 80s Falcon because it's not going to give me a six-figure driving experience. Much as I love those cars.
You're right.
It's not a $100,000 ownership experience in my humble opinion.
I like that. Yeah.
But that's where I put it when I look at value of cars is I don't want it to look at, I want it to drive.
Yep,
if I owned an XC ESP, I'd be wheeling it. I'd have my son's car seat in it and I'd be using it. I wouldn't be parking in a garage too scared to do anything with it. So you move on now where EB, ED, EFEL Falcons with V8s in them are starting to attract prices for two reasons. One, because the earlier cars are unattainable because they're really expensive. And the other thing is there's no really good examples left.
Yep.
Everything's rusty, bashed up, and they're hard to get parts for.
Those EFEL things as well. There was a period there, I don't know, 20 years ago, there were so many 9-second cars at Heathcote, just turbo, 4-litre street cars, no cages or nothing. They were a fast car when done right and cheap.
Yeah.
Still a good car.
And still a good-looking car. I'm on the record way too many times.
You look at the VL turbos as well in that regard. Like, they were expensive, but they were quick. You could make them quick. They were light.
When I was 17, 18, you could pick up a VL Calais turbo Calais for $15,000. Yeah. And that thing was a rocket.
I'd never seen the likes. The mates and I had never seen the likes. We stood there at Heathcote when the first stream of fucking yellow VLs turned up to race. Sounded like a fucking hairdryer, just twisting all over the fucking track and running ridiculous times. Everything else, you had your fingers in your ears, you know, like it was a real shake-up in the culture, I reckon.
Yeah, there was a few quick ones, sort of around Ballarat, especially back in the day.
And that's sort of, that's why we're here having this conversation too.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, on differences.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but we're all united in one thing. Like, we're all car people. It just doesn't matter.
That's exactly right.
Just enthusiasts.
You know, and for me, my taste in cars is heavily influenced by my connection to cars via my family. My father had a Datsun 180B brand new in 1973 when they were released, and he modified that car and he moved it on and bought a Celica.
Yeah.
And then when I was born, the Celica went and the TE Cortina turned up, which was a 4.1. Now, I was only probably 10 when that car was sold.
Yep.
And the reason the car was sold is because it was the family car and it was worn out. And, you know, the reliable car to buy for a family was a Toyota Camry. So that's what was parked in the garage.
Yep.
And then my dad went and bought an XR6 for himself as his work car to drive to him from work.
Yep.
But if I could find a metallic green TE Cortina with a black vinyl roof and a green interior with a 4.1 and auto in it, because that was the family car. That's the car. I hang on to that.
Yeah, and never late classified, shoot us a DM if you got that car.
I reckon there's one in our, I can tell you where there is one.
That was the family car. So my uncle had a Series 1 Bluebird sedan, same colour as my wagon.
Yep.
My auntie had a Series 1 Bluebird sedan. Yep. It was the LX, and it was the first car I'd ever seen that had power windows in it and an electric aerial. When you turn the key on, it had the aerial in the rear quarter that went up and you put the key in ignition. And that's why I've had this love of Bluebirds, because I like the shape of the car.
Yeah.
And the fact is, that was the last chrome bumper Nissan.
Yeah.
Because after Series 1, they went plastic
bumper. There's a photo somewhere of this guy in the family album sitting in the seat and tribute fucking one that used to go around to all the motor shows and stuff, you know. So it wasn't lost on me as a lad either.
But it was just, they were the cars that I grew up with.
Yeah.
And I'd always liked the shape, and I went on to other things and owned a lot of different cars over my little journey through automotive history.
Yeah.
But, I got rid of a Barra XR6 Turbo Falcon and 3 months later I got a $6,000 Bluebird parked in my garage, and it's the most fun car I've had.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of going on the record too. Like, I've said it a few times, but in custom cars, I was in that, you know, like where I've dealt with people who define custom as radical, as traditional, as all these other things. I'll call the car custom based on the colour alone or for a fucking sticker on a window. Whatever you do to stamp yourself into your car, stamp your identity into it, like we were saying earlier, I think that's, you know, for me, that's what it's all about. And that can happen to any car.
Spot on.
So, all good. I think it's probably time to wind up. I think Scotty's having a couple of technical difficulties since we lost Andrew, but we've got Simo looking to hang up his bloody laptop. And love the fact that everyone could get involved and we could bloody put this out there. So, very impressed.
It's been awesome.
What do you say? Should have hung up now. Thanks for having me on board. It's back from Simo.
Well, we've actually started doing that, haven't we? I thought we were just having a discussion.
What's that?
The podcast.
It's all done, mate. I asked Andrew for some parting words. One of them was, it's getting late, so we will have to sign out shortly anyhow. Parting words would be, keep on building and driving whatever blows your hair back, and if you come across something you don't like, just keep scrolling, but preaching to the choir there, of course.
Yep.
On the chrome bumpers, I had to chrome vinyl wrap the Mitzi front bar. Many have not picked that I did that. Lol. So, yeah, you can turn plastic bumpers to chrome too, I guess, you know, if you fucking got the right fucking approach. So,
and that can be custom. That can be seen as custom.
Absolutely.
It can be, mate.
Yeah. That's degrees. Yeah. It's degrees of custom. So, you know, definitely, again, just, you know, personalize your vehicle, get down amongst your community. You know,
why custom's not? Cool. It doesn't matter what form it takes. Even a custom truck, or if I see a custom Kenworth, or, you know, I travel the Hume Highway a bit, you see a lot of custom trucks out there with plenty of chrome and airbrushing and that. How cool is it? Yep. Always make a point of giving a driver a thumbs up. You know?
I'm the same.
Yeah.
Unless they're being arseholes and they're just speeding up so they can fucking block me from fucking passing. You know, if I can jump in that right lane and back off 20 k's an hour, I really find it hard to celebrate them in that moment. But otherwise, you know, I have plenty of time for our big rig drivers.
Plenty of big rig blokes that have got custom cars in their laws as well. So,
absolutely.
Custom's cool, and custom still starts with a C.
Yeah, there you go. Love it. Yeah. Correct. I can, we'll get Andrew back in a minute. He might fucking take contention with that. But custom cars, Oz, definitely starts with a fucking C.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everyone wanted the capital K. Yeah, except Lambos. I'm small M Moses, though, as well, you know. Nah, all good. I think we're going to call that a sign off. What do you reckon, Scotty?
Easy done, guys.
All good. Skinny. Good chatting, fellas.
Nah, great. Thanks heaps for joining us, Matty. Hey, you know.
Yeah,
love what you've done with your hair, too, mate.
Thank you. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Nah, all good, bud. Cheers. Thanks, heaps.
Righto, legends.
Love your work. See you later.
It's been a pleasure.
See you. Takes one to know, five. See ya.
Oh, fuck yeah. See you guys. Bye-bye.